So welcome to this morning's Dhamma talk. And I did promise last night to get into more detail on the Thousand Petal Lotus simile. It's a very, very helpful simile because it shows how this meditation works. And from a different perspective, but not contradictory, but complementary to everything you've heard and read and been taught before. And it also brings in some other very helpful pieces of information. Number one, that yes, you can do all of this as well. And number two, how it works, how the whole thing evolves. And especially the most important little part of the teachings, the next stage is right inside the stage you're on now. So we don't get rid of something to get something better. We stay where we are, go deeper into it, and it becomes the most beautiful part of what you had before. Which means you always go in to the next stages of meditation or development. You never go on to something new. You go in to where you already are, but go deeper into it. So that is a beautiful little part of the simile of the Thousand Petal Lotus. I've given you already a quick overview of it yesterday. In particular, the lotus, when it is closed, it is rough, leathery, serrated on the outside. It's not smooth, it's not beautiful, it hasn't got any fragrance at all. And if you did not know a lotus, when you saw one at night time or first thing in the morning before the sun really warmed it up, you would never imagine that inside that solid bud were these most incredible, beautiful, fragrant petals. And that is a very encouraging simile, because that's actually how things work. The example was, I don't know, 3 years ago now maybe, there was a gentleman who came here on a retreat. I forget which particular retreat it was that I was teaching. And I make big mistakes as well. I stereotyped him, because when he came in, he was this big fellow and he had sort of unkempt hair and tattoos all over him. And as you may know, about 6 kilometers up the road, you know, not the way to the monastery, the other way, there is a prison. And so straight away I said, excuse me, sir, you've got the wrong place. The prison is out there. It was a stupid mistake, but easy to make, because he looked, you know, not the sort of person you'd expect in a retreat center. You know, he's really big, tough, you know, and tattooed all over. But he said his name was on the list, and it was. So, you know, I apologized to him. I made a silly mistake, just stereotyping. And so he was on a retreat here. He hadn't done much. I hadn't seen him in Nolamara before. Don't know how he got in. But anyway, there he was on retreat. And on one of the interviews, after about 5 or 6 days, I was blown away when he started describing what his meditation was. And he had got a jhana. And I don't say that easily for people. In fact, that somebody showed me a book about samadhi practice. I'm quite a well-known teacher now. And they had the 5 meditation teachers, and who was the easiest to get acknowledged that you had a jhana, and who was the hardest to get acknowledged you have a jhana. You know, who has the highest standards? Just like, you know, sometimes you get a degree from a university in the United States, but just sending $25, you get it by return of post. Or you can get some universities, you know, they're low down there, so the degree you can get it reasonably easy. Some universities are really hard, some are just really high standards. So it's like a ranking there. And with no disrespect to good old Aya Kramer, she was number 5 in the list. Number the 2nd, really hard. You know, if you go and say what the experiences are, to get it confirmed as a jhana was really hard. Number 2 was Parok Sayadaw. If you know that Burmese monk, quite well known, you know he'd interview you, and if he said that you had a jhana, that's really tough standards. But number 1, the hardest monk to get acknowledged that what you experienced was a jhana was Ajahn Vam. So they said, if I say you've got a jhana, then all the other ones, oh yeah, sure, because I have the toughest standards, apparently, in this book, which somebody showed me. What is that book? Do you remember what it was? About something like Samadhi or jhanas or something? Anyway, one of these books. So I was actually quite interested that you're the toughest monk. So there, this fellow, he came up to me, and I said, no, that was really easy to say. You had a jhana, mate. And he was the last person I expected of the whole retreat, for many retreats. And there he was. And I say that because this lotus simile, you look at yourself, think yourself rough, don't know much about Buddhism, maybe just meditating not that long, or meditating for years and never got anywhere. You think that you can't do it, you're this rough, closed up little thing. But it's inside each one of you. Just like inside every lotus is the beautiful innermost petals, inside each one of you is the same. So all you need to do is just open up and go inside, get some decent instructions, and be patient, and then it happens. So that's some encouragement for you. And to this day, that I've been doing this for such a long time, I can't really predict which one gets jhana, which one doesn't. It's just, I can't really predict that anymore, especially with this guy. And some people have been meditating for years, really kind, very good, sit a long time, and they don't get the jhana so easy, but other people, they just, wow. So anyway, how does it work? And I already gave that simile, opening up the lotus. It is the warmth and light of the sun. It's a very lovely description there, because warmth, we understand what warmth is. Now, in our emotional world, it's a kindness, the compassion. That's what the warmth is. And the awareness, just keep the awareness there, the light and the warmth of the sun. And you know that the lotus opens up. So what that really means in your meditation is not the harshness. That doesn't open up the lotus. That just breaks it and destroys it. But just the warmth, which also includes some patience, and the awareness. Now, I already introduced that the first morning talk with how to work with your body. This is not just the physical health retreat. Well, that's just a start of it. That's like, the free gift which comes from meditation, the extra, the bonus. Because when you're aware of your body, aching, tired, as I kept on saying, aware of it, not trying to get rid of it, being with it, being kind to it, and you understand, you see it, feels it all just disappear. It relaxes. When I remember just growing up in London, parents were poor, so I spent a lot of time playing soccer on the streets, or even in the school playgrounds, which were asphalt, no grass anywhere. So, you're a young kid playing soccer, really getting into it. You go for a tackle, and what would happen? You'd just roll on the stone paving or the asphalt of the playground or on the road, and you keep grazing your knees. So that I still remember just growing up in London, just always having scabs on my knees, the dry blood. And it was just, you got used to it, it was just par for the course, what do you expect? So just like one of my friends, he's now a monk over in Sydney, and he had a very interesting life. He started off in the poorest part of Sydney, Balmain. It was a dockland area. And he's about the same age as me, maybe a bit older. But no, he wrote a little book, From Balmain to Buddha. It was his little biography, very well written. But the first lines, you know, if you write a book, the first sentences are what really grabs you. And he had a classic opening sentence, you know, about his growing up, going to school in the roughest part of Sydney. He said, if you still had your two front teeth when you were 7, you were a girl. Every boy would be in fights. It was such a tough area. But anyway, where was I going with this now again? The opening up, the kindness, yeah. The kindness which you do to your body, you can actually feel it, just how you can open up the body. Now, this is metaphorically, the kindness there, and it relaxes, you get healthy. That sort of little health there. When I was growing up, again, I didn't get my teeth punched out, but always grazing the knees. And of course it hurt. Only 6-7-year-old kid. You'd run to your mother, and my mother would kneel down and kiss the wound. She used to call it kissing it better. And as soon as she did that, all the pain went. Every time. I got used to it. It wasn't like placebo. It was just like kindness. And I often say also that now, you know something about biology. It was really amazing that a mouthful of germs on an open wound never got it infected. Maybe it's because, you know, my body was used to my mother's germs. I don't know. But anyway, it was just always healed up. The best part was the pain had gone straight away. I took that for just as normal, never really understanding just that for many people is not normal. The ability of kindness, compassion, to heal, to take pain away, to relax. Pain in the body and kindness to relax it so there's no pain there anymore. Now, if a mother can do that, you know, you're closer to yourself than anyone else in this world. So you can do that as well. Just a beautiful bit of kindness. And you relax the body, and the pain, the ache, the tension vanishes. I keep on focusing on that again and again, because you can experiment on that, and that's not that hard to do. It's really important for you to be able to do that, and it works. The simile which comes behind it was one of my favorite similes. It was based on a small passage in the suttas, but I don't know why I sort of took on that little passage and really developed it, but it's really quite well known now and very famous, and it is incredibly helpful. It is a monster in the emperor's palace simile. And it's one of those stories, you know, which you can see it in the suttas, but many people just gloss over it. And my goodness, just the power that simile has is immense in all sorts of walks of life and all sort of problems we have in life as well. The story begins with an empress. We've got to sort of make this gender neutral. An empress who was off on a meditation retreat when a big monster came into her palace. And the guards, the security, were so frightened and terrified of this monster that they hid under the tables. They went behind the flower pots. They went in the cupboards because they were scared of this really frightening monster. And that allowed the monster to go right through the palace into the main hall and sit on the empress's throne. And at that, the security said, that's gone too far. So they came out from under the tables, out the cupboards. They said, get out of here. Who do you think you are? You know, this is our empress's place. You've got no right to sit on our empress's throne. And at that, the monster grew bigger, more frightening, more aggressive, and more ugly, more smelly. And that really upset the security. They got the soldiers out, the ministers, and they made all sorts of threats, but every unkind word, unkind deed, even unkind thought, get out of here. The monster kept growing bigger, more ugly, more frightening, more smelly. And by the time the empress came back, this monster was huge. You know, could, you know, maybe fit half this hall here, and was so frightening that people tell me, I've never seen the Alien movies, but that is supposed to be the most frightening monster that anybody has ever created in movies. But that made, now this monster made even the alien monsters look like teddy bears. This was really frightening and scary. And the smell, as I often say, the stench coming off this monster was so gross that even the maggots crawling on the monster's skin threw up. They vomited. Not even maggots could take that smell. And the monster was just getting bigger and smellier and more aggressive every moment. So, when the empress came in, what did she do? The reason she was the empress, because she was smarter than everybody else. So she took one look at the situation, knew exactly what to do, and she said, welcome, monster. Welcome, thank you for paying me. Why have you waited so long to drop in? Has any of these Jojos got you something to drink yet? Pointing to our security and minister and servants. And no. Said, what would you like to drink? We have chai, tea. Oh, really delicious. We have peppermint tea. We have Earl Grey. We have orange juice if you want some apple juice. Or how about some, what else have we got in the kitchen? I don't know, some carrot juice or pineapple juice or millipede juice. And millipede, because sometimes millipede, you know, just climbs in there. You don't know what you're eating. Anyway, we would you like something to eat? And there was really sincerely kind. And at those few words of sincere kindness, the monster shrank a little bit, got less aggressive, less ugly, less smelly. And that was enough for everyone to see what was going on. So they decided not to try and get rid of the monster, but to pamper the monster. So about a couple of dozen of them, decided to give the monster a foot massage. The feet were so huge, they needed about two dozen just for each toe. And they were pressing it, if you ever had a foot massage, just over there, that's really nice. And some others massaged the monsters, had such a huge head. Imagine the shoulder pain monsters must have. They gave him his shoulders a nice massage, and somebody else brought the tea for the soldiers. Is it too hot? Do you want the air conditioner on? Or do you want your own personal air conditioner? Do you want it too cold? And what else do you want? Oh, yeah, something to eat. And somebody was really smart. They said, well, how about a pizza? Why a pizza? Because you get monster size. So anyway, every kind act, kind word, kind thought, the monster kept shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. Until it was so tiny that one more act of kindness and the monster vanished totally, completely away. And that's based on a story in the suttas. It's something in the Yaka Samyutta. And the Buddha said, we call such beings anger-eating monsters. Give them anger and they get bigger. Get out of here. You don't belong. Get out, I'm telling you. Out, 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 out. And they get more ugly, more aggressive, and more of a problem. And that's such a wonderful little story, because that's what happens when, you know, we want to get rid of something. Come on, no more stupid thoughts. Get out, 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 out. Or, you know, just no sloth and torpor. Come on, get out of here. I shouldn't be sleepy. You know, I had enough sleep. You know, I'm a monk. Should not be sleepy. Get out. What happens? It gets worse. Bigger, more of a problem. Now, pain in your body. Get out of here. I don't need to be painful. I don't need to be aching. And I'm meditating. I'm trying to get somewhere. Just get out of here. Why is it that just and I have 9 days retreat and then I get sick? Really unfair. Why'd you do this to me? Kind of get sick when I'm going to work, then I can take a day off. But no, what you do is to welcome pain. Thank you for coming to visit me. Oh, it's so nice. Is there anything you need? And if you're kind to aches, discomforts, you find it gets less intense. These are anger-eating monsters which have come into your palace, your body. And you say, get out, and it gets worse. That is one of the classic teachings for people with cancer. Get out of here, you don't belong. Get out! And what happens? They get more tense, and it gets much worse. Welcome. It's really sort of quite scary doing things like that. Welcome, cancer. Welcome, tumor. Thank you for coming to visit me. Because that kindness does amazing things. But is it really kindness you're doing? Where you say, come on, get out of here. No, I'll be kind to you. Welcome, monster. Thank you for coming to visit me. Anything you need? Why haven't you shrunk? Come on, I've been kind to you for the last 10 minutes. Come on, get out of here. It has to be sincere kindness. And that's the problem when sometimes people say it doesn't work because it's not really sincere, it's not full on. So you've got an ache and pain in the body, welcome, thank you. Thank you for coming to visit me. And then you can feel, you get the feedback from mindfulness, yeah, the body does relax. I do that, it's just really great knowing that technique. That, what was it, that the food poisoning? Real tough food poisoning. It was just really aches and pains. And actually, I was in my cave, and I was shouting, screaming. I couldn't stop because it was, you know, it was automatic. Ah! Ah! And then I just focused on it and just relaxed it all the way, 20 minutes or 30 minutes or something, and it was all gone. Wonderful. It's great you can do such things. But this is just the start of it. You practice on the body so you know what letting go is. You know what kindness is, because again, when people say, yeah, I know I'm supposed to be let go, how do I do it? Practice on your body, first of all. You're much more aware of your body than your mind, so at least practice on the body, learn how to relax, open the door of your heart, you know, to aches and pains and things. They're monsters, welcome them in, and then you find they just, your body really relaxes, you feel really healthy. Now you've done that, now work on your mind. What do you mean by the mind? So this next stage of opening up the lotus, I'm coming back to that in a moment, I haven't forgot, that your emotional world. So just to get people going on this, is you ask yourself, how peaceful am I? Or the opposite, how agitated am I? And give it a number from 1 to 10. 1 is really peaceful. 10 is really agitated. Give it a number and be honest about it. I'm not going to ask you what that number is, but just be honest. How peaceful or how agitated are you right now? I'm not interested what that number is. This is just a skillful means to get you looking at the right place. Mindful of what I call the peaceometer. How peaceful are you? I call it peaceometer because we've got thermometer, speedometer. What else have we got? Some other ometers. But it tells you just what's going on. So you find out how peaceful or how agitated you are. Now you know how peaceful or how agitated you are. That's one of the signs of your mind, your emotional world. Now, what makes that peaceometer, the needle, change? What makes it become more peaceful, coming closer to 1? What makes it more agitated, goes up to 10? What is the cause of actually relaxing your mind? What's the cause of agitating the mind? So So this is where we do insight meditation, understanding the causes of things. So we mess around, trial and error. Okay, come on, be peaceful. What does that do? Need a woof, right up to 10. Come on, if I don't be peaceful quickly, I'm not sure what's going to happen. Up to 10 again. Oh, I'm really fed up. Doing this a long time, doesn't work. Up to 12. Oh, let go, this is good enough for me. Goes down to 1. The card has opened the door. Welcome, stupid mind. Welcome, craziness. Thank you for coming to visit me. Anything you need, madness? And it starts going down to 1. You are learning. It's sometimes I think, well, Ajahn Chah taught me, let go, be kind, be gentle. It's right there in the Buddha's teaching, but still people don't do it. I didn't do it. And so now I'll teach you guys. Come on, just let go. You can't do it. Why? Because, yeah, it's easy to say, but what actually is letting go? What is compassion? It's one of the amazing things that so many, say, Buddhists or others, they practice compassion, so they think, but they don't really know what it is. I think they do. Compassion is what relaxes the body. It takes an ache, like a tummy ache, and just relaxes it totally away. You know it by its results. Compassion looks at your mind all over the place, it lets it be, and you become really peaceful and still. My classic story. I was 6 years as a monk, and I found this really beautiful retreat up in the mountains above Chiang Mai, and it was paradise for me. It was in the middle of a tea plantation. I had as much tea as I could drink. For an English monk, oh, that was just heaven. I had a lovely deep cave. And then I spent so many beautiful meditations in that deep cave, so much so that there's lots of bats in that cave. And you know, to this day, when I smell bat shit, it's fragrant. It just brings back all these wonderful memories of you know, just a happy time, you know, meditating in the bat cave. So that's all like, you know, this is just associations, that's it. So it brings about happy associations for me. That's absolutely true. Sometimes you go somewhere and there's bats around, you know, in like a little cave somewhere, you smell them. I like it. Okay, it's weird, but you know, it's just associations, that's all. But anyway, that is all going well, but then, you know, sometimes you get in your difficulties, and I was by myself. I asked the villagers, now how come there's no more monks up here? And they say, because it's too quiet for them. Really weird, but yeah, it was pretty peaceful, no one else up there. And that I was meditating and I started getting restless. You know what I'm talking about, starting thinking about all sorts of stuff, planning, remembering. But it's really weird, the restlessness, there's no point to it. I didn't need to plan anything or remember, there's no business to be done. But I started getting thinking and thinking. And you know where those thoughts started going to, like fantasies. And especially romantic family. My old girlfriends, I wonder if she's still available. No, stop it, I jump on. You like being a monk. Well, maybe she, no, stop it, stop it. I really wanted to become a monk, but these thoughts would actually come in. And it's so hard to push them away. Get out of here. You know, I want to be a monk. Just watch my breath, breathing in, breathing out, breathing out. Well, maybe she was really nice. No, stop it. So it was a battle, and I was losing by the hour, you know, and then sexual fantasies started to come in, and there's all sorts of weird stuff. Stop it! You know, if someone could read my mind, I'd be so embarrassed. I'm supposed to be a monk. But they would keep coming in, stronger and stronger. And, you know, some of you, you know, have great restlessness. Sometimes it's like you're going crazy. Can't control this mind. And I was just really desperate. So I went up to no one to talk to. And so I went up to the Buddha statue about 3 times, and basically I said, help. And idea came up, and because, you know, Westerner, you had to do a deal. And, you know, a compromise. And that deal was I'd behave for most of the day, my mind would watch the breath, but I would put 1 hour every afternoon from 3 till 4 p.m. every afternoon. I wouldn't try and control my mind. Romantic thoughts, sexy thoughts, weird thoughts, anything was allowed. Anything. Weirdest stuff from 3 to 4 p.m., anything goes. That was my sexy hour as a monk. So what happened? It wasn't as I expected. It was still a battle. Even though you try to watch your breath, come on, wait till 3 p.m. you can think of that sort of stuff. When it got to 3 o'clock, if you've ever battled your mind like that, it's exhausting. So when it got to 3 p.m., I went up to my room. I'd leant back against the wall, put my feet out. I was exhausted. So, okay, any thought goes now. Girlfriend, sex, whatever, just come. And for the next 60 minutes, this is not an exaggeration. It blew my mind. The next 60 minutes, I watched every breath without missing one. It was so easy. I thought, what the heck's going on? When I was trying to get rid of those thoughts, they kept coming in stronger and stronger. I said, okay, if you want to come in, that's fine by me. Then my breath was so peaceful. That's the angry eating monster simile. I wish I could put it in words when I was that young. Get out of here, you don't belong. What happens? You're feeding them. They're getting stronger and stronger and stronger. I said, you're welcome. Thank you for coming. Thank you. And then they just, there's no need for them anymore. So, your peaceometer. Find out what makes you peaceful. Get out of here, trying to control things, trying to get rid of things. That really puts that peaceometer up to 10 or beyond. Just letting it be. Just become calm and peaceful. You don't need those sexy thoughts. You don't need that wandering mind. You don't need anything because you are content and happy. That's how this works. Other simile. Oh, this was, I should remember these people and give them a medal or something, because this woman, oh, she's really, really impressive mother. She told me that she had a six-year-old son, and the six-year-old son threw a tantrum one day at home here in Perth and said, Mummy, I hate you. I don't love you anymore. I'm leaving. That's what he said, six-year-old leaving home. So what did a mother do? This was emotional intelligence way up the top there. She said, okay, darling, I'll help you pack. Have you ever thought that if you had kids and they say you want to leave home? Oh, good idea. Get out of here. I wasn't being quiet. But she actually did it. She helped her kid pack, you know, all the essentials of life, you know, like the Spider-Man outfit, the teddy bear, whatever. And said, before you go, darling, you know, life is a long journey, so let me pack you something for lunch. So I made a favorite sandwich, and so she said she waved her son off at the front door of her house. There he was, a little suitcase in one hand, a brown paper bag with a sandwich in the next, going off, leaving home for the first time at 6 years of age. And off he went, you know, to the garden gate, opened the gate, turned left down the road into his life, free from his mum. First time he left home. He got about 50 meters down the road when he was terribly homesick. Turned around, walked into the gate, sort of through the gate, took down the path. Mother hadn't moved. Welcome home, darling. That is really emotional genius. A six-year-old won't go that far, especially if you're kind and loving to it. Why do you want to leave? You've got a loving mum. Don't you dare do that. You'll be in big trouble. You're going to be grounded. Blah, 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 blah. Of course, that makes her want to leave even more. Give me the favourite sandwich, and if I leave home, I'm not going to get that very often. I better get back again. That kindness there. Now, what's that got to do with meditation? Oh, I have to say, this Singapore girl, when I told that story to her, she was staying in Bodhinyana Monastery for a little while. When I told that story, because she had a wandering mind, she was being so disrespectful. She was laughing her head off, and she was actually rolling on the floor in front of me. You know, maybe Westerners might do that, but Singapore, you know, she was rolling. And I thought, what the heck are you doing that for? You wouldn't believe the Sajjabhab. Almost exactly the same happened to me. Now, in Singapore, one of the big flats, or the big apartment blocks, HDB, isn't it? Yeah, HDB flats. That she had a big blow up with her mum, about 6 years of age, about the same age. Mum, right, sit, I'm leaving home. Mother packed a bag for her, but she didn't give him a sandwich. Instead, she gave her 20 Sing dollars, buy your own lunch. You're laughing because that's the Singapore, you know, just. Anyway, so I gave $20 to the kid, and no garden gate, went to the elevator, the lift. And then just managed to, managed to press the ground floor. Bye-bye, darling, have a wonderful life. As the elevator doors close, and her daughter went down to the ground floor, first time left home. But she didn't even make it out of the elevator. As soon as she was on the ground floor, she was homesick. Managed to press the button of the floor where she lived and came back up. Elevator's open, the mother's waiting. Welcome home, darling. Exactly the same happened. And that happened to me when I was trying to get rid of my stupid mind. My mind was throwing a tantrum with sexy thoughts. What did I do? Okay, off you go. Packed its bags, gave it its favorite fantasy. What happened? It came straight back to me with the breath. What's going on there? If you are restless, why? Who are you trying to run away from? You know who. Yourself. You're giving yourself too hard a time. Your relationship to yourself needs to be worked on, adjusted. Until you love yourself so much. Hey, me again. I'm meditating. Just hanging out with me. Chilling out with my breath. With the best of friends. I never tell my breath what to do. Because I don't tell my breath what to do, my breath doesn't tell me what to do. We just hang out together. So easy. Just watch the breath go in, breath go out, like good friends. Inseparable buddies. Breath and me. You get it? If you try and control it, it runs away. Scold it, it will just always go away. Maybe not come back again for a long time. So this is the important part of mindfulness. Caring. Being kind. Being friendly. Do not look upon your body, your mind, your breath, or any part of it like a master to a slave. Don't treat your mind, your body, like a slave. Work with it. Be kind with it. Be sensitive to it. Have a wonderful time together. So, I look at my piezometer. Are you peaceful? I know how to move that needle down to one. Just be kind to it. And then what happens is, especially just past and future. We all know that you could supposed to let go of the past and let go of the future. Can you do that? Maybe some things. But what that person did to me, that's unforgivable. I'm not going to forgive that. I'm not letting them gonna get away with that. That's harsh. You can feel the hardness of that. Instead, you have this loving kindness towards the past. Beautiful softness. Oh, I don't know why they did that. There must be some reason for it. Must be in a bad mood that day. I don't know why. Maybe they were crazy. Yeah, actually, that's probably the best explanation why they did that. They're mad. But you can give them sort of this, what we call like the defense, instead of the prosecution. The best possible argument to exonerate them. the best possible argument to exonerate yourself. So whenever I tell a bad joke, I always remember that my father told bad jokes. So it's not my fault. It's in my genes. My dad's fault. That's what it is. Not me. I always pass the buck. So, in other words, we soften the past. And we soften the future. What are you afraid of anyway? So, who knows what's going to happen? So, because of that, you know, we soften the future. And always just, well, you know, if we die, we have to die anyway. So, isn't a wonderful place to die? In Jhana Grove Meditation Center. Oh, this is probably the best place to die of all places. This is probably the fast track to the formless realms. I don't know any place you want to go. You know, sort of, you know, I'll sort of use my divine intervention to sort of get you upgraded where you should be down in hell, but I'll speak some nice words for you. But whatever, when you don't have that fear like that, it's amazing. You're so soft, and then the future is not a problem anymore. Neither is the past. Out of kindness, it vanishes. So what we're doing, we watch the body. It relaxes. The mindfulness and the kindness, it opens up. We go to the inner layer of petals, the mind. It's got time there, past and future. Most of all, the thoughts about past and future, you don't need to, but we do because there's something to do. Just like I've seen people do that. You know, you go to people's houses and you see the kids looking at the TV. So what's on? Oh, nothing's on. How many channels are there? 120? 120 channels, there's nothing on. They go to the refrigerator. Things fall out there. Anything in the refrigerator? Nothing in the refrigerator. What's going on? You see that what happens in the mind, all the fantasies, the past, the future, we're just looking for something just to distract ourselves. Sometimes something really important, that takes the best, but if there's nothing there, anything will do. You get your best fantasies, your best worries, your best pain from the past. If that doesn't work, you get something else. If that doesn't work, you know, somebody else's worries. You know, people love dramas. If they haven't got enough dramas in their own life, they watch Korean dramas or whatever. What do you want that for? Anyway, so there we go. We can see that is how we can make our past and future. With kindness, soften it. Don't try and get rid of it. Come on, get out of here, you don't belong. It's beautiful kindness. If you want to come, that's fine. And then you find it just vanishes. And you're in this moment. Because you're kind to this moment. This poor little moment is not the best, but it's more than good enough. You may be hot, cold, hungry, whatever, but you know, it's not that bad this moment. Could be worse. So in this moment, with kindness, you've opened up the lotus into the present moment. And that's, you know, quite a nice little beautiful layer of petals. So then what happened? You're just watching this present moment. Body's disappeared, no past, no future. As I mentioned the other day, the next thing which is moving. The breathing. So just it opens up, you got the breath. You don't do it, you're just sitting there watching things happen. And it opens up, you're aware of the breath. With no problem at all. You don't have to fight, I've got to watch the breath. Come on, watch the breath. Don't go anywhere. Breath. Of course you can't maintain that. That's such negativity. When you relax and you let go, the body's relaxed, not a problem. The past and future, not a problem. The present moment, oh, this is nice. And the breath comes up in the present moment. It's always going in. You're watching the breath. Now what happens next? Oh, this is the juicy parts of meditation. You're watching the breath. And I said, because you're not doing very much, you don't need much oxygen, the breath gets very smooth, and also you get more aware. Remember what I was saying, I think, the first day about walking up the hillside? The slower you go, the more you see. the energy of the mind is not going into thinking and planning and controlling. It's all going into just knowing. And so you see the breath, you see more of it. You see the beginning of an in-breath, the beginning of the in-breath, right to the end. The beginning of the out-breath, and beginning right to the end. You see the whole of the breath, not just in, out, watch the whole of it. And that's when you do your walking meditation as well. You're walking there, and after a while, being aware of the sensations in your feet, you can see just the whole one step. You know, first part of the foot which moves up from the ground, and how does your foot move? Does it go straight up, forward, and down? Of course it doesn't. Naturally, it just, my one goes up, and it goes back a little bit, and it goes like in an arc, and then down. You feel all the movements of your feet, like the whole of the step, instead of just left, right, left, right, left, right. You don't fake it or force it. You just let the body do the walking. You just watch it. And it becomes delightful. It's weird. I never realized just how delightful it could be just doing walking meditation. Just sitting there. Well, your gaze about 2 meters in front of you, so you're not distracted. Walking naturally, not too slow, not too fast. How the body wants to walk. It just walks in. You can feel every part of it as it goes up and goes down. Because you're not doing very much, you're not controlling, you're not forcing, you're not fantasizing, thinking, planning, remembering, it means that your mindfulness increases. So that even the walking gets very amazing. And you feel just when the foot goes onto the ground for the first time. It's an amazing sensation. So, you're getting delightful. And that's what happens with the breath. See the whole breath and it becomes amazing to watch. Just one in-breath, 1,000 different sensations. And you've taken it for granted, you haven't really noticed it, but wow, this is life coming into your body. Now, oxygen. And it just, the body does this all the time since you've been born. And it's just never let you down once, otherwise you wouldn't be here. And so it takes all the toxins out afterwards. It's a wonderful thing to watch. It's a delightful breath. Got the breath layer of petals, then the full awareness of breath petals, and then the delightful breath petals. Now the lotus is really getting fragrant and very beautiful. So that's why when people get into these stages, they're smiling, having a great time. And of course, happens naturally, just being kind, being aware. And it becomes so amazingly wonderful, good fun. And you just started. Delightful breath. Oh. That's what we just jump to, like, sabai. And sometimes you don't force it, it just happens. When that happens, oh, you're just sitting here and just having a great time, not distracted at all. And then what happens next? Delightful breath. It gets even more delightful until it opens up. The breath vanishes and just the delight is all that's left. Just the joy, the happiness. Whoa. You're not seeing the breath as a bodily sensation. Now it's a mental feeling of the breath. Going back to satipatthanas. Satipatthana, the first satipatthana, with your body, making sure you're sitting reasonably good. Relaxing the body. Those first two satipatthanas with watching the body, and also just relaxing the body, so you can feel it, the aches and pains, and how to relax that. That's also with a bit of the second satipatthana, the vedana. And then when we get to the mind and the peaceometer, that is classic third satipatthana. The nature of your mind, how peaceful it is, how agitated it is, and what causes it. That's the arising and fading away of these things. What causes these things? And you're learning that. That is classic satipatthana. And then anyway, you go sort of deeper in to the breathing, first of all, that's back to the first satipatthana. And then you just get the joy. Pure second satipatthana. The Vedana anusati. Mindfulness of this Vedana. I call it experience, not feelings. But that's another sort of talk later on. That is exactly how the Buddha described it. So, we are aware of the joy of the mind. Oh, this is nice. That's how the Buddha said it. You're just getting into it now. Piti sukha. It's called a citta sankhara. It is how the mind sees the breath. Just like how the mind tastes the food, the joy in it. Other times you taste the same food, ordinary. After a deep meditation, it's gorgeous. What was it a year or two ago? I had one of the meditation retreats. Was it this? No, the range retreat before. And after finishing my range retreat, 15 days by myself in my cave, and of course, first time came out, breakfast, and had baked beans. That was the first thing I put in my mouth, a spoon of baked beans. And I couldn't help myself. Wow! Never in my life have I tasted baked beans like that. Okay, it was out of a can, but that didn't matter. It was. Anyway, it's an explosion of taste and flavor in my mouth. I mean, it was really intense. Never, ever have had a spoon of baked beans like that in my whole life. Of course, it's nothing to do with the beans at all. Everything to my... After really good meditation, your mind is just so open and so powerful. Just a baked bean. Which is, wow. You may laugh at that, but that's going to happen to you. It may not be a baked bean, a piece of seaweed, or I don't know what you eat. Wow. So this is actually what you're actually doing with the breath and with this piti sukha. This is not going crazy. This is what is supposed to happen. And so what happens is you get really into this lovely breath, and then the breath vanishes, you've got this great joy, this beautiful lights appear in the mind. It's okay, delightful breath, layer of petals, that's amazing, just so fragrant, so incredibly beautiful. And it starts to open up and these lights inside. Even more beautiful, amazing, powerful, never seen anything like this before. And when that opens up, sometimes not enough kindness, not enough mindfulness, you start messing around. Closes up again. Go back to the breath. Something that comes and goes up. That nimitta stage is very sensitive. We'll see it and then it goes away. I've seen it, but it went away. Sometimes, little one, not so... Well, I'll give a whole talk on nimittas later on. But anyway, this is... All you do is be aware, be kind. Open the door of your heart. Monsters, whatever, what comes into the palace, you're fine by me. So, beautiful awareness, kindness. And after a while, these incredible nimittas come in. Wow. Beautiful. And what do? Just be aware and be kind. When it's ready, they will open up. And inside the nimittas, now you're getting somewhere. Wow, that's like you've never seen before. Right inside the nimittas. So it opens up. So, I want jhanas, it's the last day of the retreat. Please. You can't rush this process. Only thing you do, be aware, be kind, that's all. Be aware, be kind. Open the door of your heart. It's just patience as well. And eventually it just opens up. And these incredible states of mind. The jhanas. And the first jhana. Can't feel the body, really sort of flying now. Just no sense of the physical world, just this beautiful mental world, the mind, the citta. And there, just such bliss. Bliss like you've never experienced before. Powerful. Sometimes people describe this not as the effective part of it, but they describe it as pure, unconditional love, being immersed in it, total acceptance, nothing missing, no me, the bliss of incredible, unconditional, unchanging love, You don't have to do anything. You don't have to be anybody. You don't have to work. Your will is starting to disappear. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to change. Where does will come from anyway? Just for imperfection. The stupid idea that you can be better, or someone else could be better, or something could be better. If it's okay, where's the need for any will anymore? Don't you change anything? This is amazing. Ooh, this is great. So the will's gone. Ooh, yay, that's nice. And that's only the first jhana. And then that opens up. Second jhana, wow. One of the weird things is that if you ever get a jhana, they think, wow, this is it. This is enlightenment. This is union with God. This is the ultimate. It can't be better than this. Wow. This is afterwards. While you're in there, just blissing out. When you come out. But then afterwards, you find this a deeper jhana. This really deep layer of petals, and inside is another layer. Ooh. Really nice, but even more sweet, more joyful. That's the second jhana. Ooh. It opens up into another one. And then another one. And then another one. And then another one, and then another one, and then another one. And inside that, that's the last one, the last layer of petals. And neither perception nor non-perception. And inside of that, you get the jewel in the heart of the lotus. You know what that is? I'm not telling you. You'll have to find out for yourself. So that's the jhanas. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Getting excited. Anyway, there we go. Some of the other questions I'll answer this evening. Very good. So now it's interview time. Those are once interviews. For those who want to just chill out, remember to be kind to yourself, kind to your mind. If you're a friend to your body, a friend to your mind, then your mind will stay with you. You won't have any restlessness.